transition house was near downtown Norman, an easy walk to Mark Barrett's office, and Ron dropped in often. The lawyer and the client drank coffee, talked about music, and discussed the lawsuit. Ron's primary interest in the litigation, not surprisingly, was when it might be settled and how much money he might get. Mark invited Ron to attend his church, a Disciples of Christ congregation in Norman. Ron joined a Sunday school class with Mark's wife and became fascinated with the open and liberal discussions about the Bible and Christianity. Anything could be questioned, unlike in the Pentecostal churches, where the word was exact and infallible and contrary views were frowned upon. Ron spent most of his time on his music, practicing a Bob Dylan song or one from Eric Clapton until he could closely imitate it. And he got hired. He landed some gigs in coffee shops and cafes around Norman and Oklahoma City, playing for tips and taking requests from the slim crowds. He was fearless. His vocal range was limited, but he didn't care. Ron would try any song. The Oklahoma Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty invited him to sing and speak at a fundraiser held at the Firehouse, a popular hangout near the OU campus. In front of 200 people, a much larger crowd than what he normally saw, he was overwhelmed and stood too far from the microphone. He was barely heard, but appreciated nonetheless. During the evening, he met Dr. Susan Sharp, a criminology professor at OU and an active death penalty abolitionist. She invited him to visit her class, and he readily accepted. The two became friends, though Ron soon considered Dr. Sharp his girlfriend. She worked to keep things on a friendly, professional level. She saw a deeply scarred and wounded man, and she was determined to help him. Romance was not an option, and he was not aggressive. He progressed through phase one at Transition House, then graduated to the second phase, his own apartment. Annette and Renee prayed fervently that he would be able to live by himself. They tried not to think about a future of nursing homes, halfway houses, and mental hospitals. If he could survive in phase two, then the next step might be to find a job. He held things together for a month or so, then he slowly fell apart. Away from structure and supervision, he began to neglect his medication. He really wanted a cold beer. His hangout became a campus bar called the Deli, the kind of place that attracted hard drinkers and kids from the counterculture. Ron became a regular, and as always, he was not a pleasant drunk. On October 29, 2001, Ron gave his deposition in his lawsuit. The room at the stenographer's office in Oklahoma City was packed with lawyers, all waiting to quiz the man who'd become a celebrity in the area. After a few preliminary questions, the first defense lawyer asked Ron, "Are you on any type of medication?" "Yes, I am." "And is that medication that a physician has prescribed or directed you to take?" "A psychiatrist, yes." "Do you have either a list or do you have information as to what medication you are taking today?"
"I know what I'm taking."
"And what is that?"
"I'm taking Depakote, 250 milligrams, four times a day, Zyprexa in the evening, once a day, and Wellbutrin, one time a day."
"What do you understand the medication is for?"
"Well, Depakote is for mood swings, and Wellbutrin is for depression, and Zyprexa is for voices and hallucinations."
"Okay. One of the things that we're certainly interested in today is the effect that the medication may have on your ability to remember."
"Does it?"
"Well, I don't know."
"You haven't asked anything for me to remember yet."
The deposition proceeded for several hours and left him exhausted.